इतिहास द इंडियन हिस्ट्री पॉडकास्ट।
हाय एंड वेलकम बैक टू येट अनदर एपिसोड ऑन इतिहास पॉडकास्ट। आई एम इन कॉन्वर्सेशन विथ शेफ एंड माय फ्रेंड कीर्तिदा फड़के, विथ होम आई एम डिस्कसिंग अबाउट द होल गिव एंड टेक ऑफ फूड एंड ऑब्वियसली अलॉन्ग विद दैट द कल्चर। सो इन द प्रीवियस एपिसोड वी ट्रेस्ड हाउ India sort of accepted food from all over the world and Indianized it in a very peculiar way. And in this episode, we are going to trace exactly the other side of the coin. What food went out of India and how did it find its own shape in other parts of the world? So Kirtita, welcome back and over to you.
Thanks, Sneha. So today we're going to talk, as Sneha prefaced, let's talk about the foods that went from India and got adopted pretty much all over the world. I think it's a known fact that India has been a very important spot on the trade route, on the Silk Route, or whether it was maritime trade. India has been a large exporter of spices. So in fact, pepper is something that there are records of pepper being exported to the Roman Empire and to Greece. In fact, the word pepper comes from the Tamil word pippali. So even the word has an Indian link to it. You had documents saying, you know, our coffers are running empty because we are importing so much pepper and paying India in gold. Now, that is the historical view on it. Something more relatable would be what I have seen in like my most recent, I was in New York studying at a culinary school, and it was very fascinating to see some very Indian things being appropriated by a culture that was pretty much like not accustomed to these things even 5 or 10 years ago. The most common, which I think everyone knows now, is turmeric. Which started off as, you know, purely like from a health perspective, anti-inflammatory is the number one claim for which people are consuming turmeric in what they call turmeric lattes, which is nothing but, you know, haldi doodh. Now, turmeric is one. There's a whole host of other such health-derived ingredients that are very Indian in origin and application. Like tulsi is also similarly being consumed for health reasons. Turmeric, tulsi, both have not just culinary importance in India, but even cultural. And that's being taken in these very foreign countries in their own context. So people are having tulsi in the form of encapsulated. Similarly, ashwagandha, which I was super interested in this. Ashwagandha is part of what is being called as adaptogens. So these are a host of natural herbal ingredients that are being used in cafes across, well, the hipster parts of New York, you know, like places like SF, London, where they added, yeah, they're doing adaptogen lattes. Like, who would have thought I would see ashwagandha at a really cool cafe going to help me deal with the daily stressors in my life? Interesting to see the twist in the concept. I like an ingredient that I personally am very close to. Kokum is native to the western Ghats of India. People don't necessarily, like in the north, people don't necessarily know what kokum is. Maharashtrians from the coast, Gujaratis use it, but not a lot of Indian communities even know of it. Kokum, I've seen a kokum based product used for recovery for athletes in the US. And kokum is used with another native Malabar tamarind. They are both part of a family called Garcinia. So kokum is Garcinia indica and Malabar tamarind is Garcinia cambogia because it grows broadly in India but also in Southeast Asia. You see them now sold on Amazon in the US as, you know, again, in capsule format. And it's interesting to see how an ingredient that we use in almost, I use it almost in my daily life in my cooking, touted for its supposed magical health benefits. What is interesting, so a similar thing happened with ghee, and ghee happened around the time I was in the US in a big way, where you started seeing Whole Foods carry, like Whole Foods had some 5 different brands making ghee. From what I understand, till like a few years ago, you could only find in Indian stores in the US or in Europe. But now you had a very mainstream upmarket chain of stores selling different brands of ghee. And again, ghee was being used principally because for its health benefits. It was supposed to be good for you. Bloggers had started talking of how they start their day with a teaspoon of ghee. What I find interesting with all these, whether it's turmeric, ghee, or even kokum to a lesser extent, but these two ingredients, is they started off with a very unique niche proposition, which was a solution to a problem, whether it was inflammation. But now you see a lot of food publications also talk of these as for their flavor, for their cooking properties. Mm. The fact that ghee is high smoking point. So you have publications like a Bon Appetit using ghee in their recipes, and they're not talking of the health aspect of it only. They're talking of how ghee has an amazing nutty taste. And this is what is making it more widely used in this culture. Now, you wouldn't see ghee in their pantry, or haldi for that matter. They're using it for their flavors. In fact, there are brands that have come up that are selling spices from India, really curated, ethically procured spices like turmeric. And people are talking of the fragrance and how distinctly aromatic it is, which I think it's kind of going a full cycle from a very small targeted population using it to a more wider application, where now maybe in your cabinet of herbs, you'll find a small bottle of haldi somewhere. In your oil rack, like with your olive oil and your canola oil, you'd probably have a bottle of ghee sitting somewhere.
Actually, my next question was going to be about that even right now, you know, when we adopted as Indians, when we adopted a lot of food from outside, we have adopted it to such an extent that we don't even know that it is not ours anymore. We have perfected the recipe of Indianizing it. So, you know, my question was going to be that will we see the same happening over there, where they have sort of Americanized turmeric so much, or Europeanized pepper so much? Will the other side of the coin happen anytime soon, or is it already happening?
I think it's already happening with pepper, for instance, for sure. Like there are documents dating back to Alexander's time, so like somewhere around 300 BC that document pepper. So it's been used for so long. In fact, if you think of like one of the most iconic Italian dishes, right, cacio e pepe.
Yeah,
it literally means cheese and pepper. And it is one of the most iconic Italian dish. And it uses pretty much nothing other than pasta, cheese and pepper. That's
right.
It.
Right.
So pepper is very crucial to a lot of such, authentic, as one may, one says, authentic dishes. So pepper for sure. Even turmeric, I'm sure we're going to start seeing applications. I remember seeing a friend use raw turmeric grated into her salad, like her salad dressing, which is an application I had, again, as Indians, you know, salad is something that we have.
In form of koshimbir, possibly.
We have, correct. We have things like koshimbir or pachdi, you know, but the way salads are eaten there, like I saw her grating fresh turmeric into a dressing with olive oil and a bit of lemon juice. And I'm like, wow, fascinating. Like, so it's already being used in ways that are best suited to how they eat their food. Another interesting fruit that was very interesting for, again, like comes from the coastal part where I spent all my summers, is jackfruit. Now, jackfruit is local to India. It grew in India. In fact, the word jackfruit comes from the Malayali word chakka, which the Portuguese kind of morphed, and that's how it became jackfruit. Jackfruit is being used in very interesting ways. So raw jackfruit is being used as a meat substitute because it has a very, it has a very pleasantly meaty texture. So with some seasoning and flavoring, you again see a lot of trendy cafes and restaurants working with raw jackfruit in the form of a replacement for pulled pork taco is like a pulled jackfruit taco. Fresh jackfruit is very difficult to find in the US readily. So they're using jackfruit, processed somewhere in India, Sri Lanka. But they're using it, like again, a very something that is native to India, has seen almost like a resurgence or a different application. Indian communities also eat raw jackfruit, But the form of eating it is different, where it's directly being used to replace a pork, very typically in these countries where veganism as a movement is seeing great traction. So that was, again, like having jackfruit tacos at a Mexican place in New York was fascinating. Like, again, I had only eaten our fansachi bhaji or yes. had a katta biryani, you know, like that was the extent of, you know, why my imagination with jackfruit. But
yeah, I mean, I always thought that furnace or jackfruit was always a very, not just Maharashtrian, actually, very peculiar to the western coast of India. But then, you know, I'm so glad to hear that it is finding a place in the vegan movements of the world as well. You know, just one last thing that I'm really dying to know about is that, you know, how mangoes is something that most Indians love to love and love to hate people who don't love mangoes, I being one of them. So, mango and the botanical name Mangifera indica, which again essentially probably indicates that it originated in this land. How has the king of fruit, as we like to call it, the king of fruits, how has that been adopted all over the world?
So, mango is definitely, as you said, the name itself indicates an Indian connection. So very much there's a reason it's our favorite. Like, you know, it is very much local to here. That said, mango has traveled extensively all over the world. In fact, the mangoes you find most often in North America are mangoes that come in from South America. All of Latin America grows different types of mangoes. So Mexico, for instance, uses mangoes very interestingly in the form of salsas. It's an appropriation, often appropriation if you think of it. But there's a very common, supposedly Mexican salad that uses beans, mangoes, and some herbs. India continues to remain the largest producer of mangoes, but they're widely mango traveled extensively actually with the Portuguese. So, you know, that kind of explains the Latin American connect and suitable. I mean, the climatic conditions were also suitable. They've become a big hub for cultivating and exporting mangoes. Mangoes are used in drinks, in cocktails. It has an amazing, well, it's sugary, it's flavorful. World over, people love the taste, and it grows not just in India or Southeast Asia. So access is also easy.
And we sort of, as mango lovers, not particularly me, but as a country, as mango lovers, I think we particularly take pride in this wide-scale adoption of mangoes, which also sort of gives boost to our exports from this land. You know, we have been discussing give and take of food, and as the note that we started on, that food is essentially something that is very fluid. Food travels with people, food transcends ages, transcends boundaries, and it is something that is going to evolve. I mean, as far as food is concerned, then the change is the only constant, is a very valid thing to say. So we traced how outside food came to India. We also, in the last episode, we also traced how Indian food went outside. And in both these places, the natives there, the locals there, have adopted to this food beautifully, so much so that most people, at least here in Indianized version, and possibly in a few years in the other countries, possibly people would not even realize that the food does not belong here. And well, I would say it's a good thing, because then it's a sign that you have truly assimilated that food in your culture, and that food has become one with you, because, you know, that is how we as a culture evolve and we as human race evolves.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Give and take is how humans develop, whether it's in food, whether it's in culture, whether it's as individuals. I think when people talk of this is the most authentic recipe, you should really view it with like a bit of introspection. You can say it's a phenomenal recipe. Yeah. It's a common recipe from here. But the emphasis on things being authentic, I think, is interesting when you realize that, okay, some ingredient may have been introduced to you not too far back, as we saw in the case of tea, which, you know, Indians take offense when they learn, okay, like, you probably, you know, like, even 150 years ago, like, it wasn't that common. So, food exchange is beautiful. It opens up our minds, our hearts to different cultures, different people, and it's delicious. I think there are so many things we have to be grateful for trade. I don't think we should be grateful for the colonization, but But this food exchange will continue, and it's going to lead to some fascinating food discoveries.
We hope that it really happens. And on this very positive and very optimistic note, Kirtida, we stop here. Thank you very much for joining us on this the two-part very first episode of the new season.
Absolutely, Sneha. Thanks so much.
And we stop here. We'll come up with more, so stay tuned.